And we say hola to a Jeopardy champion, a man who thrilled everyone about almost a year. No, not a year ago, about July.
That's right.
He thrilled everybody by becoming a Jeopardy champion. Just missed the Tournament of Champions, but a very lucky man. And if he was here, we'd send him to Hawaii. And that is Extra Bags, Andy Bagley of CSN Bay Area. How you doing, Extra Bags?
Hey, Andy.
Hold on a second. I can be there in 20 minutes if you're serious, if you're going to send me to Hawaii.
Well, you would be one of the participants.
In any language you want.
You would be one of the many participants in our contest,
sure.
And we would love to have you win.
You know what it is, Marty? It's the greatest contest in radio.
Look at Andy listening. That's awesome.
In the history of radio, and that's not even in the drinking game. That's not even in there. All right.
How are you?
I'm doing great, and, you know, this is – it's just the identity of this team, and – you know, you wrote the Band of Misfits in 2010, and maybe I'm wrong, I don't know, but the way this team, every night it's somebody else, reminds me of what happened in 2010.
Yeah, you know what, though? The fans are going to start showing up in about the seventh inning because they know that, you know, the show doesn't start until right around then. It's totally against the identity of what this team has been. You know, great starting pitching, a real lockdown bullpen, get that, you know, one-run lead and then torture everybody the rest of the way until you finally get that 27th out. And it's been this complete opposite this year from, you know, the NL MVP to the last guy on the roster hitting walk-off home runs on consecutive nights. I mean, it really is amazing. And I'll tell you the truth, it's not easy when you're covering the team to write all these late lead changes on deadline, but it certainly keeps you on your toes, that's for sure.
Give us a little scouting report on Ray Yu, who we're going to see today. Now, he's really come on. First start against the Giants, he gave up 10 hits. Last start against the Rockies, he struck out 12. What should we expect tonight?
Change of speeds real well. Really throws everything from the same arm angle. You do have to wait him out. He can get a little wily and throw a lot of pitches. I think the best way to attack him is to try to drive up his pitch count, which, as you know, the Giants are not a team that really does that a whole lot. I think you just have to sort of stay short and try to put the ball in play because he's got four pitches that he can throw for strikes when he's feeling good. The Giants did get one look at him already in that first series at Dodger Stadium, but, you know, it's almost been a story of what it was like for him in spring training. I talked to a scout who saw him, you know, after one or two outings and said, number four starter. And then he just got better. Every single outing in spring training, he got better, more comfortable. And, I think that the Giants are going to have their hands full, definitely.
Andy Baggerly here with Marty and Pecan at the Public House doing our Hawaiian Airlines giveaway here in just a few minutes. Hey, Andy, we've been talking about it. Ryu's facing Kane tonight, Matt Kane. And one thing we were chatting about is who is there to be more concerned. Who deserves more concern from the fans, Matt Kane or Ryan Vogelsong? And who would you put your chips on in that discussion?
Well, I would definitely be less concerned about Kane. I think that, when you look at the 9 home runs he's given up, only once has he been behind in the count. It was a 3-1 pitch to Goldschmidt. And I just see a guy who, he's still throwing hard. He's still throwing with movement. He's just making a couple little mistakes in the strike zone. He's got a couple little mechanical things to tweak to keep that two-seamer from running back over the middle. And I think he's going to figure it out. He's a guy who really knows his body, really knows his delivery. And Vogelsong is different. Even when he's coasting, you know, he'll say after his starts that he was really fighting himself. So, you know, he's at a point now when you combine this year with the way he ended last year, not counting the playoffs.
Right.
He's been searching for a while now. The velocity has been down a little bit, too. It's been, you know, 88, 89, not consistently in that 92 range, 91 that we saw before. So he definitely, I think, has a lot more work to do in terms of how big his drawing board is than Kane. I think Kane is pretty close to figuring it out.
Okay, and one more on the pitching, or at least the starting pitching for me, Andy, is that, well, the key term, the trendy term right now is big inning. The opponents are getting these big innings on them as opposed to just chipping away a run here and a run there. What can you attribute that to?
Well, for starters, I think you attribute it to Bruce Bochy and the way he manages his rotation. You know, he's a guy who always believes in giving his starters a lot of rope. He doesn't get the bullpen up as soon as somebody gets in trouble. And that's because he knows, A, you can't burn out your bullpen, and B, he trusts these guys to be able to make adjustments and figure it out on the fly. And in a lot of these games, it's just kind of compounded for them, whether it be just luck here or there or just continuing to make pitches that are up in the zone. So, you know, eventually I think Bochy's going to have to respond to that a little bit and maybe have a quicker hook. But, you know, that being said, the team is still finding ways to win, and, and they're still finding ways to come back in all these games. So, you know, I think Bochy will always manage for the long haul. He'll always manage for 162 games, and that means showing patience in a guy who's struggling, whether it's a Ryan Vogelsong or a Marco Scudero or whoever, and giving them a lot of rope to figure it out. Because if you're a starting pitcher and you're trying to find yourself, that extra inning that you may get after you gave up four runs in the third might be your opportunity to kind of, you know, be your laboratory to figure something out that might work for your next start. We've seen that happen before, and I think Bochy recognizes that. And he works so well with Dave Rigetti and Mark Gardner, too. So, you know, Giants have a lot of things going in their favor in terms of the continuity they've got with their coaching staff and the personnel here.
No, very well said. Yeah, there's no panic in that aspect of the game. And fans shouldn't panic either. No one should. It's 30 games in, and there are track records here. So that's my point with you. Very well said, Andy. Peguero is up, and he brought an element of something we haven't seen. He just rifled a hit last night right-handed. Then he couldn't get a bunt down, and then he stole a bag, and he was extra bags last night. It was very nice what he did, and he showed me what he did in spring training. We watched them all, Andy, down there, and this guy hit ropes the whole time of spring training. Hit 415 in Fresno. He's up here now. He gives him an element of speed, and he's a good right-handed bat. What is his future on this team? What can he do?
Well, the one thing that I think is holding him back from being labeled one of those can't-miss stars is he doesn't really get on base a lot aside from getting his hits. His on-base percentage is way dependent on having a good batting average, and that's always a problem because when you get in a slump, then you're just making outs. So I think as he gets older, he's going to have to learn to work the count a little bit more and maybe try other ways to get on base. But you're right. When you look at his tools, especially pure bat speed, there isn't another player in the Giants minor league system that has Francisco Peguero's bat speed. And in fact, he may only have a peer or two on the big league roster as well. So, he's going to be able to handle premium velocity. He's going to be able to, as long as he's hanging back on off-speed pitches, he's going to be able to put a good at-bat on any different type of pitcher that you could throw out there. And you're right, he's got a lot more versatility. He's got a big arm, Shearholz-type arm in right field, and he can steal a base for you. He stole three bases last year, too. That's a dynamic that the Giants haven't really had. And one thing is, if Andres Torres is really struggling defensively, and we've seen him have some hiccups here, that's one thing that the Giants are going to have to act, and they're going to have to do something and cut down his playing time in this platoon in left field, because they got to catch the ball. So, I don't think that Peguero is on the verge of becoming Gregor Blanco's platoon partner, but if they did decide to go that way down the road, all of a sudden you've got Torres in what essentially was Hector Sanchez's role to start the season as that switch-hitting pinch hitter. And I think Torres has been very successful off the bench. And Hector, of course, was 0-for-6 as a pinch hitter, looked pretty lost. So that could really strengthen this whole team. Now, all of that being said, they've got to create room for Jose Mijares when he comes off the bereavement list tomorrow. And I don't think that they're ready to go with 13 pitchers. Bruce Bochy says they are, they could, and maybe they will for a little while. But if they do go with 13 pitchers, that means you lose a position player, and Peguero is probably the obvious guy to go back down. So we'll have to see what they decide to do.
Well, that was my next question, and what happens with Mijares, but you answered it perfectly there. The ball club itself, the West, I look at the Colorado lineup. Everybody's hitting 300. Their bullpen is second or third in the league, right behind the Giants. Starting pitching is not hopeless, they're sort of getting it done. The Dodgers are just in disarray right now. 30 games in, you have a feel for the division yet?
You know, I don't have a feel for the Rockies yet. I haven't seen them at Coors Field where they've been practically unbeatable, so I'm looking forward to going there and feel very fortunate, by the way, that we have not had to go there thus far. They had a pretty rough snow blanket in April there in Denver, so hopefully the weather will be a little bit above freezing when we go there in a couple weeks. But, they play well at home, and you knew with Troy Tulowitzki healthy, and I know he's been a little nicked up here lately, but he started the season healthy anyway. With he and Cargo and Willen Rosario, you know he's a 30-35 homer guy at least. They were going to hit the ball. And Tulowitzki is one of those guys who makes everybody around him better. So just having him back, I think, was going to be worth about 10 wins to that team. So if he can stay on the field, he instantly makes them a lot better than the pushover they were last year. And they were operating from an innings deficit. I think they set a record for relief innings last year by a National League club. And I forget who it was came up with this stat. Might have been Jerry Krasnick from ESPN. But they had as many quality starts last year as R.A. Dickey did all by himself. So, you know, when you're operating at that innings deficit every day and you're holding your starters to four innings and going with a four-man rotation, it's just you set yourself up in an impossible situation to win day in and day out. And I think even though the starting pitching, you know, is not what anybody would pick as the best in the National League, it's a little more dependable than it was. And I think that some of those young kids have grown up a little bit. You know, I think that they're going to win a lot more games than they did last year. I don't think they're going to hang on. I think you got to have the pitching there in the end, and it's not good enough. But I'm intrigued with what I see from Arizona. And, you know, I didn't pick the Dodgers to go to the postseason. I just thought they had too many parts that needed to come together too quickly. I wasn't sold on Don Mattingly's ability to do that, to be sort of that forging presence. And so I picked them, you know, to miss the playoffs. And I still think they're going to miss the playoffs.
Yeah, you might not be far off on that. By the way, Colorado, the starting pitching is getting hit at 279, and that's about the tops in the league. Relief pitching innings, they're just one inning behind Pittsburgh for the most innings pitched in relief. But that said, okay, they're fourth in the league in relief pitching. And you got Atlanta, the Giants, Pittsburgh, and Colorado. So that is keeping them in there. So for me, that's the intriguing team of the first 30 games is Colorado. So that
biggest surprise in the NL, no question. And it goes into what we're talking about. Bruce Bochy wanting to stick with his starters when they're struggling to try to lighten the load on his bullpen. We'll see what those bullpen numbers look like for Colorado if those relievers continue to get used at this rate, because it's logical to think that maybe their performance is going to suffer as a result over time.
All right, last question for Andy Bagley, CSN Bags with two G's. I always follow him on Twitter. Under, over, how many games does Hunter Pence play before he gets a rest?
How many does he play? I think it's going to be a function of the schedule, and usually they have those big blocks where the teams play about 19 games in a row before and after the All-Star break. So when we get into that portion of the schedule, then I think you're going to see him get a day off. We've had a number of days off built into the schedule here in April, which is usually the case. They build in a lot of off days because they anticipate some rainouts and such. That's sort of the way it usually goes. But you get into June and July when you play those big blocks of games in a row, and I guarantee you he'll get a few off. I even asked him, I said, are you a 162 guy? And he said the most I think he could remember ever playing is 155. I'd have to check that.
That's
so,
still,
you know,
pretty good.
He's not one of those guys who begins the year and says, I want to play all 162, like a Miguel Tejada used to be, or you know, obvious example, Cal Ripken. So it's not something that he'll push for, and I'm sure when he does feel like he needs a day off, he'll let the manager know.
I say June 15th.
I'll say sometime in May. I'll go late May. May 27th.
You taking bets on that, Marty?
Well, I'm just suggesting June 15th. Andy says May 27th.
Andy, I got to say that my main man, Marty Lurie, has been suggesting that Mike Socia takes over for Don Mattingly before the 2013 season is over. Matter of fact, Ken Rosenthal stole from Marty in his column today. Where do you stand, Andy?
You know what? I think Socia's in a much different place as manager of the Angels. I think he went from being the manager who had the most pull in terms of putting his roster together to probably one of the most powerless managers in the game now. And there's no question, I think, that he is on the outs there, regardless of whether they started good or bad. And they're obviously the biggest disappointment in the majors right now.
Sure.
So I don't think that Socia is going to make it to the end. I think this is probably his last year as Angels manager, certainly, and maybe he won't make it to the end. But you're right. There'd be no better fit in Dodger blue. I think he'd be outstanding. The Dodgers were pretty short-sighted to let him go the first time. But I think that he'd be a tremendous fit.
Yeah, that's my wild prediction of the year. That was it.
May not be that wild. Baggerly and Rosenthal are coming behind you.
If the bow tie is on it, you know, now it's getting mainstream right now. Andy, thanks so much as always.
Oh, always appreciate it, guys.
And we'll see you at the park tomorrow.
Yeah, right on, Andy.
Aloha, mahalo.
Yeah, right.
There you go.
We'll fill out an entry for Andy Baggerly.
He deserves it, I'd say.
Yeah.